Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Puyatmann und da!
Welcome to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast for the first time in 2022. We have a massive show to get through and we are super excited that you will be joining us, hopefully for the entirety of this year. As always, co-hosting alongside me to discuss all the action from the Zweite Bundesliga is the one and only Eva Lotte-Borle. Eva, it is a pleasure as always. Thank you for coming on. How has the holidays been? It's been a while since we've caught up.
I have the feeling I didn't really have any kind of holiday, so this is just, I have the feeling we're in the 13th month of 2021, or even like, 20th month of 2020. It feels like one whole year in 3 years, kind of. Yeah, I'm very well otherwise. Really love to have the Zweite Bundesliga back, obviously. It's much fun, although sometimes it's really annoying as well, but that's the beauty of it, and I'm happy to be here. It's the best part of my week, obviously.
So generous with the kind words. For me, good holiday, good to relax, refreshed after a few weeks of just not having any football, watching England get battered by Australia in the Ashes. There's nothing more like it. But anyway, enough of my guilty pleasures. Let's introduce our guest for today. He is the creator, the host of the Rasenfunk, and author of the award-winning Elf Leben. He is podcasting royalty. You can see he has a crown on his head. He doesn't realize it. It's the one and only Max Jakob Ost. Max, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Hello. Thank you for those warm and unnecessary words.
Never. Very, very necessary. You are arguably the standard of podcasting in not only German football, but world football in general. So before we get started, before we get to all our games from match day 19, we're going to ask Max a few questions because it is rather rare that we get to hear him in the English sounding podcast, and we are very lucky to have him on. So I guess the first question I have to ask is, how did you get into podcasting?
Well, I was a listener at first. I think that's the way most podcasters go. If they are not prominent, then they will do it for the money. I listen to podcasts all the while, and I'm a big soccer fan, and also was not always happy with the way that was being talked about soccer and football. I guess because the other channels that you have, television, print magazines, or online, they have all their standard about talking about football. And on the podcasting level, as you know, we have all the freedom we want to have. We can talk for hours, but we can also talk like minutes. I mostly talk for hours. And suddenly in 2014, with the help of my friend and partner in crime, Frank Helmschrott, we merged these two ideas together, talking about football and podcasting. We were not the first ones to do it, not by far. So I'm definitely not wearing any crown because I'm too young for this. But in 2014, we started the Rasenfunk.
Well, so you've basically answered my second question, that the amalgamation of a new idea of how footballing podcasts should run, and because the traditional media format was, let's be frank, and still is rather, stale, uninteresting, and edited, let's just say. Whereas with podcasting, you get the freedom to be a bit more open with your interpretation without the shill of corporate types telling you what you can and can't do unless you work for, like, The Athletic or something. So I guess with the Rasenfunk, you've done it for over 7 years. It has a cult following to the point where you've even got your own ultras group because it is such an influential podcast. Retrospectively speaking, did you expect or even think that it would have such a massive following at this stage?
No, no, of course not. And the most bizarre thing is living off it. I mean, I'm doing a podcast which is crowdfunded. There are no paywalls, no ads, and I can pay my rent, which is not too too low here in Munich. So it's completely off the limits, and we both did not expect this. I mean, it shows that there is a certain need for something like this. I mean, it's not only the Rasenfunk. There are so many great podcasts now which have all their own following, and most of them even merge within together. So some of your listeners already listen to the Rasenfunk. I listen to your shows. We all meet ourselves in our own shows. I mean, Eva hosted the Rasenfunk once, and if it is for me, not for the last time. So there is a need for another way of looking at things through the podcasting lens. In our case, it is on football. And with the social media, we got the chance to find our people and the chance for the people to find us. And I think social media was the one invention that was necessary to get these small things going, and that we can find our group of listeners. And that happened with the Rasenfunk, and I'm very happy about it.
Oh, we are happy to listen to it. And by the way, I have listened to that episode where Eva is hosting, and whilst I got the gist of what was being said, she did host it with absolute ease and grace and all the class you'd expect from someone who happens to, as she's getting right shy right now. But it is true, Eva, you were fantastic as the host, and who knows, she may even get to host the Spider Bundesliga podcast soon. Who we will know, we will see. I guess
we spoke about that, how bad I am in planning things, so I'm not sure that's such a good idea.
I mean, I can do the legwork, that's okay, I can help it, but yeah, you should definitely host this podcast, no doubt. I guess Eva has a few questions as well, and then we should get into the action. So Eva, all yours.
Yeah, obviously, Max, Elfleben is a huge success. You've talked about it a couple of times just recently with the Hörfehler podcast, but because this is in German, and we have a couple of English listeners who I think are very interested in that whole story. So besides Uli Hoeneß himself, what inspired you to create Elfleben?
I don't know, to be honest. It was a idea that came to my mind within seconds to understand the world of Uli Hoeneß, the former president and manager and player of FC Bayern. And everything else came after this. So I don't know what brought me to this. It must be some kind of, it was a question for me that was open. I did not have the answer. I think that is part of the answer to your question now. So it was a puzzle for me why he is what he is, and why he has done what he had done, and why he is so fascinating to so many people and so polarizing, why there are so many haters and so many fanboys and girls of him. It was a fascinating topic for me, and everything else came after the idea to do the podcast. Then I firstly thought about how would I tell his story, and what would be important to make firstly me and then the listeners understand what his importance has been in his time frame. So when we look at Uli Hoeneß now, we always know what he has achieved and done. And even if you look at him as a player, you always know, okay, he wins the former Champions League, he will win it as a manager as well. But at that time, people obviously didn't know it. So the first big step for me was to try to make the context and the time in which he was doing his firstly football skills and then his economical skills understandable to the listeners. And that challenged me as, I don't know if you beep here. So it challenged me very hardly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. It was a challenge for me. And then I translated this challenge into a podcast. And then I got the resonance, the feedback of the listeners that they liked this approach. And I even deepened it and widened my focus. And in the end, Elf Leben is not only about Uli Hoeneß, it is about the history of the German Football Association, about German soccer, and also a little bit about Germany itself as a country, as a society. I would never have expected that when I said I want to do something about Uli Hoeneß.
Yeah, this is actually not in the questions, but I just thought of it. I mean, what would you say was your biggest difficulty when you produced in an Elf Leben episode compared to a normal like Schlusskonferenz or Kurzpass for the Rasenfunk? What is the biggest difference, and also maybe the most difficult task bringing those two things together, which is essentially both a podcast but very, very different from context wise?
I think it's hardly comparable. It's two different worlds, because the one thing, the Schlusskonferenz, for example, it's like a talk show. Like, we are talking right now and we are recording it, and it will get published mostly as we have been talking. But Elf Leben is like a Netflix series. There is a script, there is music, there is atmosphere, there are quotes out of the interviews that I've done. And there is so much density, it is almost impossible to... I listen to my podcast always, not at the normal speed, but it is faster than normally spoken. So English podcast on 1.4 or 1.5, and German podcast on 1.8 or 2. And Elf Leben, I would have never been able to listen in a faster pace than it is produced, because I know, as the one who always tried to get it shorter and to cut things out, that in every sentence there is a new information. It's like a very, very dense book, I guess, from the script. So it's completely different to a Schlusskonferenz, where I, as right now, I stand in front of my desk and I'm talking with people. I thought that was challenging, and it was in the beginning and it is right now, but Elf Leben was a completely other level of challenge, because it was something I have never done before in this context and in this form. And I had inspirations, but nobody had done it in the way that I had done it. And you suppose that it is great to be the first to do a 3-hour scripted podcast, but in fact it was sometimes a little bit frustrating, because I had nowhere to go to with questions. I had always to figure it out myself with the team.
If I might say, you did that very perfectly, and I really enjoyed that journey throughout the year. And I think I can speak for a lot of listeners there. More general question here. Obviously, you not only watch the Bundesliga every week, as someone who had to do this a couple of times now, I don't know how you can still do it, because sometimes it's very, very boring. But you also... Obviously, if you do the Kurzpass, you watch international football. If there is a World Cup or the European Cup, you have to watch them as well, Champions League and stuff. Do you find it difficult? Like, is there any football game you can watch without being analytical? Like, is there still a football game that you can enjoy without having to analyze it in any way?
I can, if I am at the stadium, then I can mostly block out the analytical part. I'm not completely. So if you are with me in the stands, I am shouting very bizarre things. I'm shouting like, in the right half space. Look at the right half space and things. It's very. I mean, my friends know it by now, and they got used to it. But I get looks in the stands, to be honest, because I'm emotional as all the others, but it channels through these weird coaching instructions that nobody wants to hear, and I suppose are mostly just gibberish that I have to get out. But besides of this bizarre thing, I can see the match as it develops, and if I'm in the stands, I get to do it, but only if I am standing in the stands. If I'm in a seat, then it is harder, because then you have the perspective, you see all the formations, and then of course everything in the brain. It is, I mean, you can't watch soccer without the tactical analysis if you do it for a living, but it is mostly a good thing.
I would really love to just put you into one of those games at the moment where like only 700.
Oh, and yeah. Then you would hear what
people in the stadium. Yeah, and then you would hear like just Max shouting, "Right half space, there." It would actually be very funny, because probably if you have coaches like Steffen Baumgart or Julian Nagelsmann, well, obviously. Yeah, you can hear them very loudly. That would be funny. I think they would like look throughout the stadium very, very irritated. That would be
and
funny.
And annoyed, then. I guess.
Yeah,
I once noticed, and my brother told me this, he knows me the best in the stands. He once told me, and it is true, I reckoned it for myself after he told me that, that before every cross, I'm shouting, "Rückraum!" So for the space in the back of the box or before the box, because I guess if you are crossing in and you don't have any target player, then the Rückraum, the space in the back of the box, is the best option. And so I always shout play it there, but they never do it.
I mean, we all know how much you love crosses in German football, yeah. And football in general. Yeah, I mean, I take those shouting much rather than what is being shouted at football games 90% of the time. So I think I would rather hear this than what is being shouted half of the time. I mean, coming over to obviously the theme of this podcast, topic of this podcast, obviously you watch some Zweite Bundesliga, especially when you're going to the Kurzpass. With that in mind, what is your overall impression of the Zweite Bundesliga this year, but also in the development in the last couple of years?
Yeah, so it was very interesting for me to prepare for this episode. I watched all the games, but not in the of the full distance, but I skipped some parts. But I came out of the weekend with 9 first Bundesliga matches that I have seen, and then on Monday and Tuesday I got up for this. I got prepared for this and watched all the 9 second Bundesliga matches. I don't know what is wrong in my life. but the first thing what you of course you know it, but is striking to see it in action, is the slower pace. It is so relaxing to watch second Bundesliga. It's like a yoga retreat, I guess, and it is so much easier to see the tactical shifts and the formations, because everything is a little bit slower, and they have all the time in the world, and they not only can stop the ball with the first contact, they can move it to the other leg, and then they are looking in the distance, there is a player, well then I do my third contact to the other player, and then with the fourth contact I'm doing a long pass, and it goes out of bounds. But that was worth a try, and I liked it. I couldn't do it every weekend, I guess, because I can't do the first Bundesliga as well, but I liked it. But the pace is a great difference, and also the pace of thinking. I guess that what I made fun of right now with all the context is also because they not the players in the second Bundesliga are not as fast and do not have to be as fast in their decision making, and that was very interesting to see when I prepared for this episode.
Actually, quite interesting that whole time factor, because recently there was a podcast with Yanni Serra, who obviously was a Kiel player, is now at Arminia Bielefeld, and he actually said in that podcast, like, in the Zweite Bundesliga, especially as a striker, you had time to just stand there and think about what to do. Like, you actually had time to relax on the pitch. And he said this is the first thing that struck him in the Bundesliga. Like, you don't have that time. You don't have time to spare. You actually have the quite opposite. You always have to keep out looking for what can happen. And I think, this sums it up in a way. Speaking about so much about Zweite Bundesliga, basketball minutes, I think we really should get into the best league in the world, obviously.
I feel like this is like the longest period of time where I haven't had anything to say. And to be fair, I could just sit here and just be like, you know what, I'm going to produce the podcast. You two can have at it. But we're here now. And let's start with the opening, one of the first game that we're going to talk about for the calendar year. It is the league leader St. Pauli. They hosted second to bottom Erzgebirge Aue. On paper, you would expect the host in St. Pauli to annihilate a team like Aue, who are historically very, very mediocre away from home. So it caught everyone by surprise when Ben Zielinski opened the scoring on 17 minutes, his first goal of the campaign. It took 30 minutes for Eric Smith to find Jakov Medic. I am going to get there. His first goal in St. Pauli colours. And then Aue took the lead again, 72 minutes in. Holscheid's effort hit the crossbar, and then Nikolai Trujic got his first goal. It really was a game of first, because everyone who scored their first for the campaign. And in stoppage time, St. Pauli were able to rescue a point. Etienne Amanyido, his first appearance of the campaign, brilliantly went past Dirk Carlson and curled the ball into the back of the net. Martin Manuel, who'd been pretty good in the game, had absolutely no chance at all. Max, I'm going to start with you. A fascinating contest, because there was the expectation of the league leaders. They've been in really, really good form. They did have that defeat at the end of the calendar year last year. What struck out noticeably about the way St. Pauli went about it? We know that, of course, if you're listening to this today on Wednesday or Thursday, we know that they beat Borussia Dortmund in the DFB Pokal, which we're all really, really sad about that they did that. But what was your overall impression of the league leaders?
It is a difficult match to start with in the analysis, because there are two tales of this game, I guess. So the one side of it is that St. Pauli did a bunch of things very well. They had the ball possession with 72%. They had a good pass success rate. They got into these spaces that are interesting if you want to score goals. They had chances, but not too many chances. That is the first thing that you can criticize. And they were vulnerable on the counterattack. But the other side of this match, and I, to be honest, mostly focused on this when I watched it, because I didn't expect it, was the performance of Erzgebirge Aue. Of course, they got lucky. They have to get lucky a little bit if they are playing on St. Pauli. I mean, we are speaking about the 17th place in the league right now after this point that they have gotten. And I mean, Zielinski, for example, what a great game he had. He saved the possible goal for St. Pauli. He scored the first one. He set up the second one for Aue. He's the fastest player on the pitch. I was bummed by his performance. And I mean, German soccer fans, we know him because he has a history in German soccer, but I've never seen him as dominant in a good Aue team. And that was mostly my takeaway from this match how good of a performance this was by Aue. Of course, they got lucky in some situations. They all, but there was also the offside goal, so it could have been a victory nonetheless. So I was impressed by Aue, and for St. Pauli, it was not as big as an upset as you would have thought if you just saw the scoring line.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And Zielinski is a very, very good point, because he came as a free agent. There was it's a pretty lean squad. They've lost a good number of players, notably Florian Kruger is the biggest loss that they had at the start of the season. And Zielinski's been really a plug-and-play guy who hasn't really had any sort of a large impact. And you're right, his goal that he scored, the one thing that stuck out was the movement off the ball, able to get in position ahead of the defender. It's a very good cross by Prince Owusu, who, of course, they just brought over from Paderborn, an ex-Bielefeld player, someone who's toiled in the lower leagues and never really got a footing in the Zweite Bundesliga. And he was another player who really put in a pretty decent shift when you consider, he hasn't played a lot of football this season. He was very solid, although he will hate the fact that either he was at fault for giving the ball away, which ended up costing, say, our all 3 points. You can't help but not feel disappointed for our, because they were very resilient throughout. They defended hard. Of course, you're going to expect very strong performance from Martin Manuel, who always produces very strong away performances when required. But that's why I think, as Max alluded to, they can be, as much as they're happy with the performance, hour, they might be a little bit disappointed because they had the opportunity to win the game.
Yeah, and especially if you look at one other team that is at the bottom, in FC Ingolstadt. I mean, they lost on the weekend as well against Heidenheim, but actually I think this season it's a bit different than last season. You don't have that typical, okay, we have at least two clubs lined up at the end of the table, but actually you can see some kind of development both at Aue and at Ingolstadt. I mean, actually, if we talk about Aue, we always know one thing for certain, more or less, throughout the seasons. Away from home, they're typically not the best team. You don't really expect much out of them. And then they played against the best home side there is in the Zweite Bundesliga. This is the first game St. Pauli hasn't won at home. All the other games at home, they have won. And if you would have told me 3 weeks ago, okay, Aue is going to be the first team who actually is going to challenge that kind of record, I wouldn't have expected it. And I mean, obviously they are going to be disappointed, because at this stage of the season you really need every win you can get. But I also think, if you already spoke about Owusu, I mean, he's just joined the team and he made an impressive a debut for them. I really like he obviously was the assist giver for that first goal, and I really liked how he used, I think what for him was really good is that he wasn't the only striker, so the whole expectation wasn't lying on him. Maybe he just needed to get out of Ostwestfalen as well. This wasn't really his happy place to start with. Because the thing is, when I had the feeling I watched a completely different player, because when you watched him at Paderborn, he always seemed very unlucky in his movement. Still in this game, you had a couple of those situations as well, when he had the ball that he didn't immediately know what to do. But in general, I really like his display in this game, and it's going to be interesting. I think this year we really have some sort of relegation battle, especially for the last two places, that we didn't necessarily have due to Wiesbaden and Würzburg the past couple of years. So that's interesting. Just one quick word on Aminido. He actually, you mentioned it, he scored against Dortmund last night. He's actually, for him, perfect, because obviously he kind of is the stand-in for Dani Kofi-Kiri, who is at the Africa Cup. And, I mean, what a way to show Timo Schulz that he's up for the challenge. scored yesterday as well. And for St. Pauli, they have the derby coming up now. We kind of talked about it before we recorded. We don't really know what to expect out of this game because obviously they both played the Pokal last night. So either it's going to be a very, very interesting game football-wise, which we don't really had a lot of in those derbies. Normally it was more about the fans than it was actually about what was happening on the pitch. But yeah, maybe just from what we have tactical-wise, both teams at the moment, it's quite interesting what will happen.
100%. Let's make a quick shift to what was the Saturday night kickoff game. Darmstadt and Karlsruhe, of course, Darmstadt second in the standings. Karlsruhe in that mid-table trying to catch up to that jammed, packed top mid-half. Karlsruhe, we got a bit lucky, let's just say, to open the scoring. And they got a help from Klaus Jazula, who headed the ball into his own net. Don't get me wrong, fantastic header. It was a shame that it was in the wrong net, but he did prove that he could do it in his attacking net, because on 48 minutes he would score a header. It's his second goal of the campaign. As we know with Fabian Holland, as someone who is a very quick and interesting left back who likes to attack, likes to shoot, he only scores good goals. That's the thing. He doesn't do tap-ins. He does long range or from the angle, and he produced an excellent goal on 51 minutes to make it 2-1. That was two goals in the space of 3 minutes, and it certainly felt like Darmstadt were going to run away with the game. However, a momentary lapse in defensive adjustments, we'll call it, really cost Darmstadt in the end, because Fabian Schleusner got his fifth goal of the campaign and made it 2-2. Marvin Vanecek, shortly after, thought he had put Karlsruhe ahead, but Dennis Eidekin had been given word that it was offside. Either statistically, in terms of chances on goal, and the way the game really set up, it definitely felt as if Darmstadt had the better of it. But this was, for me, it feels more about Karlsruhe. We know they've had a rather topsy-turvy season so far. To get a result away from home against a team that has the offensive firepower as they've shown this season, this was a very, very good result for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, they really used the gifts that were given to them. I mean, obviously their own goal, but also for that second goal, I mean, I'm not really sure what Isherwood and Jazula were speaking about there. And you can actually see it when they score the goal. They talk to each other and they're kind of pointing towards Schleusener, but nobody really is going towards Schleusener. I'm not sure what was that about. I mean, I don't know if it was dinner plans or something like that. But that quitter ball was really good. But also, yeah, you know Schleusener, he can score that deciding goal, has done it throughout the season. And sometimes you just have to take the chances that are given to you. And Karlsruhe did that very well. They kind of were very much the counterpart of Darmstadt in this game, because Darmstadt had this huge amount of chances throughout the game but couldn't find the back of the net. I mean, I think Gersbeck was quite good in goal as well. A lot had to do with him. We have seen some good goalkeeping in this weekend. But I mean, I'm still not sure about Karlsruhe. We've seen them in the Pokal yesterday against 86 as well. I had the feeling they didn't always know what to do with possession. I mean, possession in this game was very much leveled. So maybe that was the problem for them. They didn't really know which role to play here. In the end, I mean, it's a good point for them, but I still have to say, I don't really know what to do with Karlsruhe, because they always have these ups and downs throughout the season. I'm not quite sure if they know where they stand in this table. I do think they're just from the team-wise, what they have to offer, they're one of the better teams, but they don't always bring that on the pitch. It's going to be interesting to see how it's going to develop until the end of the season, and also next season, because it's going to be another zweite Bundesliga season. I'm quite sure of it. But probably without Philipp Hoffmann at that stage. But yeah, I don't know. I think that game really summed up Karlsruhe's performance throughout the season so far.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It really is a microcosm of where they're at because they can be so deadly in front of goal, and you obviously can compare the opportunities. They had two shots on target, and okay, one of them's an own goal, but ultimately they didn't really do enough. But when the chances were presented to them, they took them. Comparative to, say, Darmstadt, who had 26 shots on goal, 11 of those were on target. That's very rare, Max, that teams don't win games when you're peppering the goal mouth like that, especially when you consider they've got two of the best five strikers in the league. It's fair to say those two had an off night because they had their opportunities to find the back of the net. And it's also a missed opportunity because they knew that St. Pauli had been beaten before and they really could have taken that top spot.
Yeah, I mean, it was the second Bundesliga in this season in a nutshell. You have the opportunity, you have the chance, but you don't take it. And that's why everything is so crammed in this table. And that is what I'm really looking forward to this remaining matches played in this season. I think it will be a fascinating. I mean, buckle your seatbelts. The last match days, they will be so nice for everyone not emotionally involved. For the fans, it will be horror, but for us as neutral spectators, it will be fabulous. And I saw a lot of what is happening in this league, in this season, in this game. You have two teams with a 4-4-2, and you have one team that has an idea what to do with the ball and how to create chances, and they created chances. Man, did they create chances? They had a lot of great headers. I mean, you mentioned Gersbeck beforehand. He was one of the main reasons that Darmstadt didn't get away with the win. And for Karlsruhe, my questions to them would be, okay, you're playing in a 4-4-2 against the ball, so you have two players on the outside to minimize the danger coming out of crosses. You have a not too bad defensive backs set up in the middle. What are you doing? Why? I mean, the counter attacks and their set pieces, they were okay, and we knew that Karlsruhe can do this, but for the rest of the game, Darmstadt normally wins this match, and just because they didn't, we shouldn't let Karlsruhe let go with this performance. What was your idea defensively? I saw a lot of problems. Some of them could come out of the missing rhythm that they have. There were kind of miscommunications, as it looked to me on the pitch. But Darmstadt had an idea. They were unlucky not to get away with it and get the win. But it's, to be honest, it's also kind of typically Darmstadt. Sometimes they just let things loose and nobody knows why. But for Darmstadt, I'm not worrying because they have all the ingredients for a great season. By Karlsruhe, considering Karlsruhe, I'm a little bit more, yeah, I'm a little bit more worrying. I mean, they won't get too deep in the table, but if they want to do the next step, I'm asking what should it be? Because I don't see it. Karlsruhe is, for me, it's always in its own pace, which is okay for the second Bundesliga, and you have kind of less trouble than in the past, but you have a squad that should be capable of doing more, and I would like to see it.
And agree. One thing before we go to our next game, you mentioned about the disorganization when it came to crosses and set pieces with that goal that Gajula scored. That is their 10th set piece goal they've conceded. That is equal worst in the Zweite Bundesliga with Sandhausen. Let's move on to Bremen. Werder were taking on Fortuna Düsseldorf. This game was unfortunately behind closed doors. And maybe it's just me, but the scoreboard seems rather flattering for Fortuna Düsseldorf, who were outrageously smashed in this game. And it did take Bremen a while to break the deadlock. And maybe that had to do with that horrendous challenge by Christopher Pedersen on Felix Agu, who was rightfully shown red, much like the color of his jersey. And then Bremen pushed and finally broke through. It was the Niklas Füllkrug and Marvin Ducksch show once again. Füllkrug with a brace, Ducksch with a single goal, but he's now got 10 for the campaign. These two have become outrageously dangerous, and it has to be said, the impact has definitely been because of Ollie Werner. You look at the statistics, you look at the numbers, and we talk about the importance of great coaching in this league, and we knew Ollie Werner was going to be a great coach at Kiel. It just didn't pan out towards the end. But Max, his turnaround for what Bremen were at the start of the season to now, they look like not only a completely different team that seemed to be kind of transcending in the mid-table, but now they are in a position where they can push for that promotional playoff spot and even, dare I say it, promotion automatically.
Huh. Okay, I have two things to say about this. The first thing is Markus Anfang's fraud on the documentary vaccine cards is the Cinderella story of Werder Bremen. They got so lucky. It is the most lucky thing I saw for a while, because they, I mean, Markus Anfang, if we put aside all the lying, he might be a coach that is okay, but Ole Werner, he has a system, and Ole Werner has a system that can adapt to the strengths and weaknesses of the Werder Bremen squad. That is the first thing. So, yeah, go for it, Werder. You have done it. You have done it in the most Werder way imaginably, with choosing a coach that lied to all of you, and then you got lucky and got this other coach which seems to fit better. But the second thing I want to add is, if I look at the opponents that played Werder under Werner, I won't say that he is a bad coach or this, but I think media and we as well, we tend to hype these streaks. And of course they are on a unimaginably winning streak of 4 matches. It's really, really great. But look at whom they played and in which kind of state they played them. So I'm a little bit hesitative right now to look into the future and not to see any obstacles. I think they will have to prove that. They can obviously do that because, of course, the winning streak is helping them mentally and also in the kind they are functioning as a team together. But I'm very looking forward to the first real opponents that they get. And I think there will be some bumps on the road ahead. And I'm very focused on, or very interested in, how they will deal with that. Because if it is downhill, Werder always was a good team. Always. But on uphill, they, in the last years, weren't a team. There were some players that wanted to go uphill and some players were, I don't get it. So, and also in this match, I mean, they played it beautifully. They had a lot of spaces in the half spaces in this game. But the thing that I wrote down, and maybe I'm too negative about it because I saw Werder in the first Bundesliga play for so many years. But one of my notes that I took was, deficits of Werder don't seem to matter that much in second Bundesliga. Speed, slow thinking on offense. That was my takeaway. And maybe I'm a little bit too harsh on this. I'm aware of that. But Düsseldorf wasn't an opponent in this match. So before I get on the hype train, they will have to do some more.
I mean, in fairness, the reason why I'm not only conducting the hype train, but directing it to the first place, was because I had Werder Bremen as not only the promoted, but top of the table. So, you know, every Werder fan was cursing my name and probably still is. But yeah, you are right. You look at the opponents they've played. Only one of those is actually in the top half, and that was Jan Regensburg, who were in the middle of a losing streak. They've got two opponents in the next 5 that are in the top half. They are Paderborn, they are Hamburg. Hamburg game is going to be massive, not only because it's obviously Nord Derby, but it will give us the best indicator, I think, before they end up playing the likes of Darmstadt and St. Pauli, where they're really at. And if they can beat Hamburg in a few games' time, then yeah, we'll say they're the real deal, but we'll also probably mention how Hamburg are doing their traditional collapsing around match day 26, which is around about the mark they've done it all 3 years before. Eva, let's talk Düsseldorf. Max was also correct in saying that Dusseldorf weren't really an opponent. They were physically there. They had 11 players on a pitch for 60 minutes and then 10 players for the remaining half an hour. But I don't want to use the word crisis because that's a real trigger word for a lot of people. But there are some serious issues that have not only been undertended from previous administrators, previous coaches, which we've mentioned this throughout the podcast this season, but it just becomes more evident every week that they've got no attacking identity. And they showed that here. A team that scores, has four shots on goal and never looks likely to score, isn't going to trouble anyone. And now they have to look over their shoulders because there are teams from the bottom third that are starting to close the gap.
Yeah, and I mean, I have the feeling a lot of things I said about Fortuna Düsseldorf last season is very much the same this season, although they have a different coach. I mean, we talked about this plenty of times. If you get a coach who has never coached Zweite Bundesliga before, who just got promoted to the Dritte Liga, it's always a question whether he can adapt to the Zweite Bundesliga. We've seen the same with Jan Zimmermann at Hannover. He had to go, and I'm like not an advocate for firing coaches, but I do really have the question what, for example, Klaus Allofs, but in general Fortuna Düsseldorf sees where the road is going to take them with Christian Poyser. I know you need to give, especially young coaches, new coaches, you have to give them time, but I have the feeling they were kind of thinking that Preusser is going to fix every problem they have squad-wise, that he's going to, I don't know, strengthen players like Shinta Appelkamp, for example. I mean, that was already also a bit unlucky. I think he was out injured. But in games like this, when we talk about two clubs who, yeah, I'm just, if you look at the history, I'm rather maybe like upper Zweite Bundesliga table, lower Bundesliga table kind of stuff. And you didn't see that with Düsseldorf in this game. I mean, we haven't seen that. We haven't seen a good performance by them for weeks, months. And I mean, this first game in the new year, the first game after you had a kind of small break. I mean, this is a problem as well. You don't have the breaks you had like two seasons ago because of COVID, and we have the World Cup in Qatar and everything is very tightened in the schedule. You don't really have time to really implement new stuff, to really get things together. I think this, especially for teams like Düsseldorf, this is a huge problem. But honestly, I mean, the red card did help Werder Bremen in this game. I'm not quite sure whether they would have scored, what Max talked about. But yeah, I mean, that Füllkrug and Dux are a very good duo up front is nothing new. Even though they didn't play, even when Dux didn't play at Werder, played for Hannover, we know what he can do. And Düsseldorf behaved like a club who never had to defend someone who they know can be very dangerous up front. And honestly, for me, I wouldn't wonder if they're really going towards the end of the season are going like have to really pick up those vital points not to get relegated even.
It does look ominous. It doesn't look good for them. Three defeats in their last five. They are only 3 points above Sandhausen, who currently occupy the relegation playoff spot. Let's take a quick break. And on the other side, we'll head to our Group 2 games. And we're going to start at the Veltins Arena when Schalke hosted Holstein Kiel. Schalke were hoping to start 2022 in a better fashion than they ended the previous year. They hosted a Holstein Kiel side that was hoping to continue its climb up the standings. Schalke certainly looked as if they had an imprint in the game, but at times looked rather disorganized, and Kiel were able to capitalize with very strong counter-attacking opportunities. In a game that was really starved of goals, it took an incredibly good goal from Alexander Mühling, who only scores penalties or good goals. This one was a cracker to beat the outstretched palms of Martin Fraisel, and Kiel certainly looked like they were on their way. However, 6 minutes later, Simon Terodde in his return, his first game since November, got his 13th goal of the campaign, beating a very outstanding performance from Thomas Dana, who was very good in this game, but he couldn't save this one. Final score was 1-1. And again, it cannot be said enough how disappointing Schalke were in this game, in that they just, for whatever reason, can't score goals more than once. They had their chances in this game. Yes, Thomas Dana was really good, but frankly, 4 shots on target from 19 attempts in what was a pretty slow-paced game, let's be fair. Not good enough is the report card for Schalke, and it even conned a Sport 1 broadcaster into thinking that Dimitris Gramotsis had been sacked. He has not, but we all got to laugh at that person. It might fuel the outcries, though, because they've had a few games like this where they've been partially in control, they've had attempts on goal, but they've ended with a 1 point or they've been beaten.
Yeah. I mean, what to add to this? I get your frustration, and of course I was expecting this. I'm not too sure if I would be that harsh on Schalke with this particular match, because they are doing some things okay-ish and they are doing some things well, but there are some errors that they don't get eliminated throughout the season. And then the basic assumption that you have made is, do we trust enough in Dimitris Gramotsis to get things better on a steady pace and with a constant return on results? And I'm not too sure if the coaching is the problem at Schalke. Because if I look at this game in particular, I see that they have problems to get inside the box. They have 10 out of 19 shots were outside from the box. That's part of the what you mentioned before, the 4 shots on target that they created out of 19 shots. But they got in the position to do these shots. What is missing is the last idea to get inside the box. I thought particularly in this game, they got a little bit hectic. They had these shots on the post in the first half. They had good chances out of the distance in the first half. And then it got all away, as it usually does, to be honest, in the last years at Schalke. And the players are not free of this spirit. I thought when I watched this match, they got hectic. They lots of crosses. I mean, Ovejan, it's a legend. 17 crosses. I mean, I have an altar here for him, just for him, in my home. But it could work. I mean, you have Simon Terodde. The problem is Chulinov is not quite the addition to this player as he should be. So that's the offensive side. So you have some good things, but you have clearly some things to work on. And it's mostly other ideas than crosses and get into chances that are real chances and not only the chance to shoot the ball. And don't always shoot the ball. It seems quite paradox, but I think that's kind of the problem. And then you have the defensive side, and there Kiel was very, very effective in all their slowliness to show the problems of Schalke. They had so much time on their attacks, but then they had good ideas how to come to chances, how to create chances. Schalke has a problem with the zone in front of their box. I think Parson, as good as he is with his vision for space, and I think he was the one with a very good setup, with a very great touch and feeling for space before the equalizer. I mean, that is Parson at its best, but Parson at its worst is when he has to run to face his own goal and already some opponent is waiting in his zone, then he won't get there in time. And then Kiel had some great chances. They were also shooting mostly from outside the box. 8 of 10 shots were from outside the box, and they mostly came from the central area of the pitch, which is very important in modern soccer. So that's the problem for Schalke 04. But if I look at it in a greater perspective, then I would say it is okay for a second Bundesliga team. And of course, we all have the, we know the ambition, we know the history, but look at the squad. Mm. Is this a, this is a second Bundesliga squad. And this is more so than, and I would have never expected this, than the squad of Werder Bremen. We talked about them before earlier. They have some players that are in between the leagues in their performance, I would say. Schalke have mostly players that are in the league they are performing right now. And that doesn't mean they can't go up in the league and they can't do it and go to the first Bundesliga, but it is uphill for them. It is they have to be better than the sum of their parts. And this they have to achieve, but I still have the feeling it is possible. Although there are so many problems and although Dimitrios Gramotsis is not Pep Guardiola, but I think it is possible. In this league and with this parts you have the clear focus on the sides of the pitch. You have a strong defensive back duo and trio of players, and you have Simon Terodde. I mean, let's be honest, how many, I mean, we are talking about a league with very good strikers in this season, but Terodde and Füllkrug, they are the ones that are outstanding over the years. So you know he will do his math and he will score his chances. So I don't know if I just want to comfort you because you were so nice to me, but don't get too frustrated. Don't get into the panic mode that brought Schalke to this place where they are at right now. They are a second Bundesliga team. They play like a second Bundesliga team, but they don't play like a bad second Bundesliga team. They play like one that has the chance to go up.
See, this is the voice of reason and a good, very, very strong analysis as to why you should listen to Max more than you should listen to me. But very true, because to be fair, you don't really think about it like a lot of people wouldn't think about it in that way. And you look at the turnover that Schalke has had over last year to this year, and it was it, the analysis is fair. You look at the likes of Drexler, his best years were in the second division, Paulsen, second division player, Terodde, who many would say was in between, but as he's getting older, it's more so that he is probably an elite Zweite Bundesliga player. Friesel at his best at Sandhausen. And it all, Kaminski is the same. You can go through the squad and it has the same notion of like these are individually very solid players, but you put them collectively and it's just, it's okay. Not great. At times, like they don't. I think the probably the hardest thing to watch with them is at times they don't. There's not really a vision, and the joke is that it's just Ovi-Janta Terodde goal, crowd goes nuts, everyone's happy. And as you mentioned, 17 crosses, like that's a lot of efforts into the box if there's no one there to deliver them to. So there's clearly there's missing links everywhere. I look at the right hand side and I think Ramsdale's not really a right wing back, and he plays like someone who doesn't understand his responsibilities backwards and going forwards and backwards. They bring in Vindhelm, the right back from Norway, and he didn't even play, and you just wonder where it's going to come together. They get Auer on the weekend. They should Auer at home. Away from home, tough game. So we will see. I guess I'll give Kiel a quick word. They were when the chance presented, they took it, but they weren't. I don't think they were that good in this game either. But they, when the opportunity came for them, they got it. It's three games now unbeaten under Masarap. They're in 12th place. It's been a slow recovery, much like their pace of play. Let's go then to Dresden. This was one of the opening kickoff games of the match day. Dynamo hosted Hamburg in front of 1,000 people. Interesting game, this one. Really interesting game because it was, for me, maybe a tale of two halves. I don't know if I'm misreading that, but Hamburg had their opportunities early on. And on 37 minutes, Robert Glatzel got his 10th goal of the campaign. It's four goals in his last three. And he is going to be vital for them going forward. But they were undone, and to be fair, they were undone by a pretty decent bit of play from Dinamo. Ball coming to Königsdorfer, who was frankly outstanding in this game, and he caused Hamburg a lot of discomfort, and he probably could have had a goal himself. He finds Julius Kader, who's someone I highly regard as a very talented footballer for Dresden. He finds Daferner, who gets his ninth goal. Daferner does really well in this situation. He makes Kader aware that he is in the space at the back part of the box. And he heads home past Daniel Hoyer Fernandez. Both teams traded chances, but ultimately neither was able to find the breakthrough. Either a good result for Dinamo. We know that every point counts for them as they want to stretch the gap between themselves and that sort of bottom six. Good positive signs for them, and obviously Daferner getting on the score sheet will be vital for them going forward.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, excuse me. The thing is that we have with Hamburg, but also with Dresden, is that with both teams, you never really expect that the game is going to play out as it begins, kind of. Because at the beginning of this game, I did like Dresden. I mean, they were having a really high line pressing that HSV side in the beginning. Both teams had easy loss of possession. I mean, you had that first scene with Hoyer Fernandez where you weren't really sure where he's going. I mean, it was his first game back in goal before Johansson. Obviously, he just extended his contract as well. And I mean, if you include last night's game against Köln, he really shows why he's back. Like, he's HSV's number one, really, really strong performance this game towards the end as well. I did like then how Hamburg reacted, how they got into the game. I mean, we know that they're very quick in counterattacks, that this is their strong suit. I'm not quite sure why Dresden thought leaving so much room open for Sonny Kittel is the best thing you could do in a game. Mm-hmm. As well as, I mean, we especially last couple of weeks, we have seen Robert Glatzer returning to kind of the days we saw him at Heidenheim. This was... he is definitely uphill at the moment. This is what Hamburg needed, really, really, really needed. And I mean, I think it's also good for Farid Alidou, because the whole attention is not at him. I mean, I don't want to exclude us from this point of discussion, because I mean, we praise him as well, but you can really see at the moment everything is about him. I don't know how many times... whether he's going to leave this winter or in summer was discussed in the past two or three games. And I mean, first and foremost, he's a very young player that I like to see, but he still has its flaws, which is completely understandable because he's young. This is the first time we really see of him at Hamburg. And I think he really needs time. Maybe it's not as bad as he stays at Hamburg for the rest of the season to develop further. But yeah, I think it was, especially in the second half, it was quite an interesting game to watch. Maybe not the best football, but just because you had a Dynamo Dresden who didn't give up and who really wanted to push forward. And you've mentioned Königsdorfer. I mean, he's one of the most interesting players Dynamo has to offer this season. He is one of these factors that really gets them going. And I mean, Daferner scoring at home is just what you would expect of him. I mean, I think it was a close call in the end. And I think... yeah, it was deserved. Maybe Dynamo Dresden had a couple of more dangerous chances in the end that Hoyer Fernandez did save. But I think it was a good start for Dynamo. And yeah, similar to what we talked about, St. Pauli, it's the same with Hamburg. It's actually, this St. Pauli game is huge, just because if you look at the table, it's very close together. And for both teams, it's not only just prestige this time, but actually can do a lot in the table. And I think I do hope we're getting that kind of game we're looking forward to on Friday, not because of the atmosphere, but really because of the football.
Yes, and it will be a classic case of two opposites attracting. You look at Hamburg having the best defensive record in the league and the second best attacking team going head to head. But yeah, it should be a fascinating game. This was an interesting game. We mentioned this a few weeks ago, before we left, about the Johansson Hoyer Fernandez discussion, and there was a feeling that Johansson had been very, very good, but it can't be argued. The last two performances, Fernandez in the cup and here is a good reason as to why, despite all the weirdness he's had to deal with over the last couple of years, why he is their definitive number one. And finally, our final Group 2 game. It brings us to the Max Morlock Stadion. It's Nuremberg and Paderborn. Two teams looking to get back on the up in this situation. And it was Paderborn who secured a much needed win. It has been a rather tricky time for them. The goal scorers are the two guys who have really been leading the front for them. Sven Mikkel with, whew, my goodness, an outrageously cheeky chip past a pretty much stranded Christian Metenia. And then moments later, he was, I guess, a hockey assist in the build-up with Felix Platter getting his seventh of the campaign. Mikkel is now the top scorer in the league again with 14. Podcast favorite Mats Møller Daly scored on the hour mark, but it wasn't enough because Asgeir Sørensen, with a candidate for miss of the season, he ballooned his ball into row Z past the athletic track from inside the 6-yard box. And Nuremberg failed to get a point there. It was evident at the end of the game, the relief on Lukas Krasniok's face. He was maybe a bit more animated than usual. We know how animated he can be. He celebrated every goal like they weren't going to score again, much like the win. Vital win for Paderborn because at the start of the season, they had been almost unbeatable away from home. That has been their strength in those ghastly grey with the orange trim. They win again in that kit, and it is their first win since match day 13. Vital win for them. What was your impression of Paderborn?
I think they did a very good game, but the danger with matches like this is hindsight is 20/20. And I think this is one of the typical matches that you look at the score and then you get into it and analyze it and you say, okay, well, Paderborn, they had the long passes for Michel went very well. Platte, Michel is a great striking duo. Of course, they were more clever in this game. And everything of this is right, I guess. But you also could say, and by this, you would also mention that Nuremberg played it too passively, that their focus on counterattack did not work out, that the shifts they made to the second half were too late, and they had it is in their fault, in their power that they lost this match. And this all of this is kind of true, I guess. And the other side would be that Nuremberg had the chance for the equalizer. I mean, Sørensen, he should make that goal in the 94th minute. And how would we talk about this match then? Would we then say, well, the shifts, they came at the right time, they were a little bit unlucky, that one long pass sets up the first goal for Paderborn, and then they even concede the second 3 minutes after. Of course, they made some mistakes, but it was also the stars were aligning in a bad way for Nuremberg. So it is hard to take away something that is more than just interpreting that what happened on the scoreboard, I guess. I think the interesting thing was that we have two squads here that try to play through the center of the field, and with their diamond formation, you have had very they were playing similar to each other, and that was, in my opinion, the reason for why the first half was, besides of the goals, not that spectacular, because it was very, very much possession in the mid space of the pitch, not that too many chances, and Nuremberg quite passively. I would also say, in my opinion, it was too passively and too much focusing on the counterattack, but it is a choice of style of playing, and we know what we get of Robert Klaus. So I guess in if I should sum up this this match, I guess the one team that was willing to get more into the dangerous areas and who risked more, that got away with the points, that is Paderborn. The other team that was not worth one goal, which should have scored the equalizer, they were the one that risked less, and therefore I'm personally am fine with this result. But it's one of the those typically games, if you only watch this match, you don't learn anything about either of these squads. You have watched some other games too. I mean, it was the beginning of this second term of the second Bundesliga. Maybe it was just a match and Paderborn won it, and that's all I have to say.
It's understandable, because when you look at teams that were definitely feeling each other out in the early phases, and it didn't really feel as if either team wanted to control the game. It was more or less, you have a bit of possession, I'll have a bit of possession, we'll kind of work things out, and then bang bang, two goals, and Paderborn are up at halftime, and you're like, don't know how that happened. But then you kind of, if you analyze the goals, you look at the second goal and you look at, I really don't know what Tim Handwerker is really doing. He's not really engaged. He's got, you know, he's almost expecting Sorensen to come in, or he's even expecting Matania to come out and punch. He's just waiting for someone else to do his role, which is to mark the guy who's already goal side, virtually unchallenged, and has a wide open goal, which is inexcusable. And even the first goal, you know, I think it's Valentini, he allows Mikkel the inside pass that lane from a long ball that really shouldn't affect anything. That should be an easy clearance. And the two goals are super, super soft, very, very avoidable. And sympathies to Christian Matenya, who was virtually left on an island to kind of fend for himself, because he didn't really get any help in those situations. Yeah. But of course, that's easy to go situational. But in that instance, those two situations cost Nuremberg 3 points. That's the way we look at it in a game that was so evenly balanced. All it took was two opportunities, and that was the end of the game. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll look at the final three games. And I know Eva's excited about this one. We're going to start with Sandhausen and Jahn Regensburg. The show that is Sandhausen is hopeful that they can, with their new signings, ascend away from the bottom three. They welcomed Jahn Regensburg on match day 19. Ahmed Kutucu is a man of not many words, but someone who brought in a lot of noise with him when he joined on loan, of course, formerly of Schalke. He started in this game, but had minimal impact. It was all Regensburg, really, though, if you look at the scoreboard and the way the game progressed. 3 goals to the good for Jan, a team that has really struggled towards the end of the last calendar year. A win for them was much needed. Steven Breitkreutz opened the scoring on 11 minutes. Set-piece goals. That's something they're very, very good at. Leon Guevara got his first Jan Regensburg goal on 33 minutes. And then Carlo Bukalfa got a third as well. It's Regensburg's first win since match day 15. And we spoke about it off air just before, and we're going to reiterate it now. Set pieces are something Jahn Regensburg are very, very good at. It's something they score at often, and something that Sandhausen cannot defend against.
That is very correct. We have to say, very, very good corner by Singh. I mean, we've known him for his goal scoring, especially at the beginning of the season. But I mean, this corner was beautifully executed. I mean, Breitkreutz with a good motion against or a good movement against Chirov, who lets him go too easy. And I mean, I do have to wonder, Alois Schwarz, I completely forgot how to pronounce the German words, was more or less brought into really stabilize that Sandhausen defense, and I don't know about you guys, but he didn't really did that throughout the season. I mean, we've seen a lot of upsetting results for Sandhausen defensively. I mean, they're not really scoring goals either, and Sandhausen completely shut down after that 1-0, and I mean, we were just 11 minutes into the game after what they offered afterwards, or they didn't really offer much, or close to nothing to say. I mean, and I like the just like the way Regensburg played this out. I mean, they in my opinion, they could have gotten one or two goals more. Especially, I think Breitkreuz was free again up front. Then good game by him in general. I think it wasn't Regensburg's best performance throughout the season, but they didn't need to bring their best game on. But it was, I think it was really what they needed after this couple of games where they, well, didn't look as solid as the beginning of the season. And for Sandhausen, they, besides Kutucu, they also brought in Nils Seufert from Fürth on loan. Have to say, he wouldn't be my first choice for really strengthen that midfield. I mean, he played at Bielefeld as well. I know in an interview with Michael Fischer, he said that at every club he played, if he wasn't injured, he played well. I would, I don't know, tend to agree to disagree, kind of. But for Sandhausen, I gotta say, this really might be the season where they're going down. If I compare them to Ingolstadt, we will speak about them in a moment, and as well as to Aue, for example, I don't really see them having that relapse any time soon. I mean, this game they lost way too easy. If you just look at the third goal, Aidini and Okorochi are too far away from Bukalfa, especially Aidini. And then Anna, this is not at the beginning of the season. Alois Schwarz has been there for a couple of months, and as harsh as it sounds, I don't really see any kind of real improvement since he's taken over once again.
I think the free pistol Paco movement is about to gain a little bit of traction. Never seen a striker so starved of opportunity to at least make an impact in the game, because they can't get the ball forward with consistency, and when they do, they immediately run out of ideas, as if they should have maybe watched Erzgebirge Aue and how they utilized him in their setup, because he feels very underutilized. That's just in the attacking sense. They are one of the worst in the league, but defensively, they are equal worst with 39 goals, and for good reason, because they don't do the basics right. Communication-wise, in whether they're going to play man or zone and set pieces, they have no idea. They're guessing on the job, and it shows in the production with you know, a lot of the goals. 10 of the 39 they've conceded have come from set pieces, and a good number of them have been avoidable. With maybe a little bit of this, maybe Patrick Drouet, who we know has been very solid, might not be the best communicator, because it starts with him. He's the one who has the peripheral view of the set pieces, what's happening, who should be marking who. As an ex-goalkeeper, you've got to take onus of that situation, communicating, keeping the shape. That's in all aspects. I don't know him, but there's fundamental errors with the way that the process is defensively, Sandhausen. And there's a good reason why they don't only just concede goals, but they concede soft goals. And in the game on the weekend, you could make a case that two of those three goals were avoidable. Maybe all three of them, if you want to be really harsh. But frankly, there's a massive problem defensively there. And it's hard. It comes even harder when your offense is not scoring. But when they are literally out on an island expected to swim back to shore to try and shore things up, it's not going to work. And this is why they look disjointed. You could plug any coach in there at the moment, and it doesn't look like there would be an adequate solution. One win in their last five is a great indicator of where they are at. And frankly, don't know if it's going to get any better for them. It really just doesn't seem like there's any sort of direction. They've got Karlsruhe, who are a bit of a yo-yo team at the moment, and then they follow that with Erzgebirge Aue, which is a massive game for them, and then Ingolstadt. So they have three games, two of those three games against the two teams that are below them. Must-win situations. Otherwise, those two teams, which are 2 and 7 points behind respectively, will close the gap. And it is almost inevitable, much like Thanos, except he has the rings. Let's move on, because that's enough Marvel references for one podcast. Heidenheim took on Ingolstadt. As we mentioned, we've seen a bit of improvement with Ingolstadt under Rüdiger Rehm. But unfortunately, they couldn't get the job done in this instance. 2-1 win for FC Heidenheim, who are third. They've had, despite their really weird season, we've talked about it, they've had winning streaks, then followed by losing streaks and weird form. But they are third. They are the third best team currently. And it's Robert Lippertz and Tobias Moore who got on the score sheet for them. They're two wingers, not Tim Kleindienst, but Lippertz was very good in this game, as was Moore. For the Arminia Bielefeld fans listening, Christian Gebauer got his first goal for Ingolstadt. They got that straight after halftime, where they were really good. They're the phase after halftime, they really took onus, and that goal they conceded was a real suck, a bit of a blow, shall we say. It was an interesting game, Max. You look at Heidenheim, who have are starting to reach the heights that we saw a few years ago. You know, we talk about Kleindienst, but the lesser names like Lippertz, who probably doesn't get enough attention, Tobias Moore, who we know he blossomed at Fürth and then he left for Heidenheim. They have a good mix of players, Heidenheim, and we're starting to see that as a team that is really unified. They play together, much like Freiburg in the Bundesliga. Frank Schmidt is our Christian Streich. And it shows. They play for him. And again, it was a difficult game for them. Ingolstadt showed a bit of courage to make it a tough game. But another good result for Heidenheim.
Yeah, obviously. And I think you can see all the problems and all the good things Heidenheim have in this match. So they both teams played a good match. I mean, obviously, we'll talk about Ingolstadt later because that is worth some words. But Heidenheim, for me, they are the perfect second Bundesliga team because they play second Bundesliga football, and I mean it in a good way. They are so good at building up their play. They are playing the most long passes, the most long balls in the whole league. With Hansa Rostock, but if you compare it, Rostock is playing them out of the first defensive line into the void, into the offense, and just hope that someone comes out of it. Heidenheim plays a lot of long line balls across the line. In this game, the build-up for the 1-0 by Lippertz was beautifully played out. They started on their right side, and then they played the ball, the Spielverlagerung. It's called the pass that moves from one side of the pitch to the other. And they had the room, because they know it is second Bundesliga. We have the time to take the ball with the first contact, and with the second contact, we can decide, the player can decide, will we cross, will we play the pass, or will I go into the dribbling and to the dribble and then play the ball into the box. And they are doing it so well, and they did it very well in this game against Ingolstadt. I was really impressed by it, and I like to watch it because you see a lot of long balls that are played that are kind of desperate modes. And even the one beautiful by Schallenberg, I guess, from Paderborn against Nürnberg was kind of desperate in this situation. But Heidenheim prepares for the long balls, and they switch the sides on the pitch, and they create chances by that. Nonetheless, Ingolstadt could have taken away here a draw. And nonetheless, Ingolstadt played also very well. And it was an error of Stojanovic that led to the second goal. And this is Heidenheim at its best. It's Heidenheim. I mean, normally we have it in the away games. I mean, you already mentioned it before on this pod. Their stats on the away matches and their home matches. It's astonishing how it does not line up with each other. But in this match, you saw why they are struggling, because they don't have the ability to close the game, to do the last goal, to score the last goal that is needed. Or the other method would be just to keep the ball, play your possession out, let the opponent run, and let him run into his fatal destiny, because he won't get the ball back. But because they are playing kind of, they are always looking for the shift in their setup play, there are a lot of balls that that come to the opponent, and opponents can adapt to it. And if they are pressed in these situations, they have problems. And Ingolstadt did this very well, in my opinion, especially in the second half. And so for Heidenheim, the takeaway is we got the points, but the problems are still the same. And it could be enough to get up, because they are so stable in the things they are doing well. And other teams have the problems that they don't get to the ceiling of their performance in every match. Heidenheim is always, it's always a high floor, and there is a ceiling above, but the floor is higher than with other teams. But the problem is they got even lucky in this match, but this could also say something about Ingolstadt more than Heidenheim. I was impressed by Ingolstadt. I think they really could have a chance to turn things around. It's a far stretch, of course, but there were some very, very good things to be seen in this match. Sapai played very well. Mm. I think they had some good lineups. The build-up play was not as simple as it was in the first matches I saw of them in the first half of the season. So there are some things developing.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Sarpe, because I've also got him in my notes. Recently, they just brought him in. He, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but he brings a little bit more grunt into that midfield that was lacking any sort of power and conviction. And you can see on the defensive end especially, he just gives that defensive four a little bit more protection when teams go and play a bit more centrally. He covers the ground really well. And he is going to be, already after one game being so impressive, he's going to be vital for a team that, let's be frank, isn't particularly deep in the players they can utilize and plug in. And you know, Rudi Gurin, we know, has a really difficult job. It was already hard enough when you have to take over from Andre Schubert. But we've seen good managers take over from Schubert and turn things around. Oli Werner, for example. And that's the thing. Like, it is a plug-and-play team. They chuck Stojanovic, who they brought in from Middlesbrough. He was at St. Pauli this time last year. Oh, it makes me wince thinking about the mistake, because it's such an avoidable goal. But as you mentioned, with the mistakes that Ingolstadt have, it seemed inevitable that something funky was going to happen. And although Stojanovic was good at commanding the box in a lot of aerial situations, that's a basic play. Like, that's not a hard one to cover. And he leaves the gap. He doesn't really get his body behind it. And he makes something that's so avoidable for a goalkeeper. It would make his goalkeeper coach wince at the first sight. Will be interesting to watch both teams go forward. We know Ingolstadt have a bit of a gap. They've got 7 points to Sandhausen, and Heidenheim leading the chasing pack of the that really tightly congested peloton, trying to chase St. Pauli and Darmstadt. And let's go to our final game of match day 19. It's Hansa Rostock, it's Hanover. This was the other Friday night game. Oh dear, it feels like I'm going to be a broken record again, because it feels like the ultimate set of deja vu for Hansa Rostock and home games, because this was a game that they should have put to bed early on. I'm looking at Haris Duljević's miss, which was inexcusable. He did have some chances later on in the game, and they just continue to fail to convert. And it just took one opportunity. That's all it took. One opportunity and a good phase of play for Hanover. And they score the goal. A terrible mistake by Simon Ryan, who plays a loose pass of all the wings you could play it to. Not Linton Miner's wing. Beats the defender. Beats the goalkeeper. That's 4 goals in the season for him. It's 3 wins in the last 4 for Hanover. And when Linton Miner scores for Hanover, they win. 4 wins in this season. He is pivotal. We know that. Eva, there's two players we can talk about in this game. One being Linton Minor, who, of course, scored the goal in a very opportunistic fashion. But we can also talk about Hanover's defense. They were under fire for the majority of the game. Two players really stood up for me. I don't know if you agree. Ron Robert Zieler, of course, keeping a clean sheet. And someone very familiar to you, Julian Berner.
Yeah, I would fully agree. And I mean, this is what Julian Berner, if he is at his best, is best at. He is a good defender. He always has had his setups or where he has a couple of games where he doesn't really know where to go, but this wasn't one of them. I mean, he won the majority of the aerials. He had 16 clearances out of the 43 that were on Hanover's side. And in a game where, to be frankly, you need that one individual player who makes the difference, it's also very important that you have a good defense so the other side doesn't really replicate what you're doing. And Berner did that very well. I mean, I have to say, in my opinion, for where both teams are coming from, just from the last couple of years, I still thought that Hanover did offer too less. But if you compare it to where they are now, it does seem to fit. I mean, I always forget they have three wins under Dabrowski because for me, it's still not such a huge joy watching Hanover games. I think one of the worst games actually I've watched in the past couple of months was that Hanover-Düsseldorf game because they needed that Linton Minor moment as well. And of course, it's good if you have a player like that, but they really, really rely on Minor bringing on that one good, really, really good move. And for what Hanover kind of brings on the table, this is way too less. As you've mentioned, for Rostock, it was, I do feel sorry for them because, as you've mentioned before, it's what we have seen throughout the season. They're not the worst. They're the better team, essentially. They are the better team, but they just fail to find the back of the net. They did put pressure on Hanover. That's why Hanover lost a lot of possession up front. This is what happened a couple of times, but Hanover also couldn't really use that. And for Hanover, I mean, this is the same what we said about maybe the Nuremberg Paderborn match. This is not a game, or in general, Hanover at this stage is not what you can say, okay, this is an uphill road, because still I don't see that whole huge difference going forward. I mean, Dabrowski picks up the points. He's luckier than Jan Zimmermann in a way, but still I don't really know. They're out of the woods yet. And for Rostock, it sounds very, very, I know, stupid, but they're not picking up points that they show. Maybe from, in general, we have three teams that went up. They all show some sort of potential, but I know 70% of the time, unfortunately, it does not show in the results in the end.
Yeah, it is crazy because these two are really a team of contrast. Hanover are just abysmal to watch with the eye test, but then you look at where their problems are. Equal worst goal scoring team in the league. They've scored 15 goals, and it's a miracle that they are even in the position they are, in 12th place, 5 points clear of Sandhausen, because they are far worse than that. In their wins, they've won six games this year, and that in itself is an achievement. Four of those wins have been 1-0. And this game kind of typifies their massive problems. They are so inept in the final third. They're really slow at making decisions. They allow their the opposition defenders to get a shape, set up, and not feel threatened by any situation. Because excluding that counter-attack, there might have been one other opportunity where you felt, maybe Hanover are going to do something here. They're so mind-boggling, and it's amazing that they came away with the win here, because I don't see it as Hanover won the game, but more or less Rostock found a way to not win, and it showed, because they find ways to not score opportunities that are there. And we talked about their reliance on Jean Verhoek. When he's not scoring, who's scoring their goals? Like, you look at their squad and you're like, well, maybe we see Strilly Mamba do something. He didn't even play in this game. Ridge Muncy can offer something very inaccurate in front of goal. And then the list just carries on. Dulevic, very wasteful, as proven in this game. Bria doesn't get into enough dangerous areas to really impact that he's going to have a chance at scoring. And there's just problems everywhere in that attacking third. It was a problem that Jens Hartl had when he was at Magdeburg, when he came in the Zweite Bundesliga. The difference being is that they're not in the bottom three. If he was in the bottom three, I would fear that he might be in a bit of strife. But let's see if they can turn it around, because it is not... Frankly, they're a little bit better than what they're showing. I think that's the... Showing results-wise. And I think that might be the consensus as it is. Before we go, of course, we like to talk about our kick tip. And we actually happen to have the person who is leading the kick tip. He was the Herbstmeister. Only a measly sixth this week, but still leading the pack. And we had a three-way tie for the top scorer. Of course, German Pyramid, who is James Rees, who you should definitely follow for German football content in the English language. Harzer Roller, and I might need help pronouncing it. Is it Eva Lotte Baller? Oh, Eva! Congratulations, 13.
Yay, first time. Yay.
So, and she continues her march up the table. Me, not so much. We're not talking about it. And I guess we should also talk about podcast recommendations. I think it goes without saying that we talk about the Rasenfunk as a podcast that you should definitely listen to in the German language. Eva, anything that we should get amongst?
Yeah, I was on the search for a new comedy podcast and I found one. It's by BBC Four. It's called You're Dead to Me, and they promote it as a history podcast for people who hate history. I don't hate history, but it's always like 1 hour long, and it's the host Greg Jenner, and he is always joined by a historian and a comedian, and they talk about various stuff, not only people or historical people, but also events, or like, for example, there was an episode about fairy tales and fairy tales throughout the world, and you always have a quiz in the end where you can guess yourself if you listen to it if you want, and that's actually quite fun. I've listened like to 8 episodes in the past week, because you can just easily skip them, and it's always very, very fun. Actually, I laugh a lot, and I didn't think, I don't know, witches being burned is something that you can laugh about. In a way, there are funny stories about that, and yeah, it's cool.
Very, very interesting. Max, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you join us to give such fantastic insight on the Zweite Bundesliga. Where can our wonderful listeners find you?
On the top of your kick tip but only for a few more match days, to be honest. I'm Guy Netzer on all the on all the social media platforms, or G Delling on Instagram, and the ones that G Netzer was taken before. It's a pun you don't have to get if you're not German, and I don't know if it's a pun anymore by this stage, but there you can find me if you want. But I'm tweeting in German right now, and the Rasenfunk, of course. If you have to follow me, then follow the Rasenfunk.
There we have it. That's a wrap. Thank you for listening to this extra long edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We will be back next week to discuss all the action from match day 20. We hope you have a fantastic weekend, and we'll see you next time.